I can't remember exactly when it happened. It might have been sometime in the 2010s maybe. But suddenly everyone was talking about gluten. Celebrities were ditching it. Athletes were crediting their performance to cutting it out. Wellness influencers were declaring it public enemy number one for your gut. Now, if you have ever been diagnosed with celiac disease, skipping gluten isn't a trend. It is a medical must. But for everyone else who swears they're gluten sensitive or intolerant, is gluten really the villain it's made out to be? Well, a new research review published in The Lancet looking back over decades of studies says that your gluten sensitivity could actually be something else entirely. So why do so many people feel better when they cut gluten from their diet? With me is Associate Professor Jess Bersikorsky, Head of the Human Nutrition Group at the University of Melbourne. Jess, welcome back to Life Matters.
Good morning, Tegan. Good to be back.
Do we know when gluten became a dietary pariah?
It was sometime in the 20s, the 2000s. Gluten's bad reputation really took off. And your intro hit the nail on the head. It was fueled by celebrity endorsements. I think you could name every celebrity that's claimed the gluten-free diet has helped them with something, whether it's Kim Kardashian, Miley Cyrus, Gwyneth Paltrow, or Novak Djokovic going from number two to number one in the world. It's been the gluten-free diet is the cure-all from fatigue, brain fog, bloating, or performance.
I don't want, like, I was sort of like, lol, wheat is the thing that kept you back from being number one instead of number two. But truly, like, if people are having those symptoms and they've cut out gluten and feeling better, like, there's not nothing going on there.
No, exactly. There's, you know, you can't argue with feeling better. And if at the end of the day they are feeling better and they're following a nutritionally adequate diet, then great. But then if you are unnecessarily cutting something out and putting unnecessary blame on something, that is when then we would like to turn to the science and work out what's going on.
Which is what you've done. You've done this review of the evidence. It's been published in The Lancet. What did you find?
Yeah, so what this Lancet piece was reviewing all of the current existing gluten-related research. This means any studies that look to see if there's a symptom response for where gluten has triggered symptoms in people that don't have celiac disease, as well as trying to understand how, so mechanistic studies. And collectively, across all of these studies, most people who believe they react to gluten show no difference when giving gluten versus a placebo. So in other words, these symptoms are real. We're not debating that. It's actually that gluten itself is not the trigger. And the evidence is showing that the culprit instead of gluten is often something else found in wheat, like fructans, or the way that the brain is interpreting sensations from the gut.
So a couple of potential things there. You mentioned fructans. I think that has to do with Australia has a strong role to play in the development of the FODMAP diet, which I think a lot of people have heard of, even if they're not quite sure what it is.
Yes, indeed. So if we break down what gluten is first, gluten is a protein that is found in wheat, rye, and barley. The carbohydrate component that is found in those same grains is fructans, and fructans come under the cluster or the umbrella of FODMAPs. So these are fermentable carbohydrates that we now have very good evidence, and indeed the low FODMAP diet started here in Melbourne in Australia. We have very good understanding for how FODMAPs trigger gut symptoms in people. And so when you are removing something like pasta, bread, cereal, you are removing gluten, but you're also removing fructans from your diet.
If they're in the wheat, then what does it matter if we're calling it gluten intolerance or not? Like, if you're still going to have to take that thing out of your diet, then what difference does it make?
Well, true, and there is some debate. Is it gluten intolerance or is it wheat sensitivity? But I would then argue that actually when we are removing cereals and grains unnecessarily, there is actually a difference between FODMAP restriction versus gluten-free diet. And there is more flexibility when you look at a FODMAP restrictive diet versus gluten-free. And in this group that we know nothing should, a restrictive diet should not be encouraged long term, and it should always come back to trying to reintroduce and re-establish tolerance and diversify the diet as well.
You're listening to Life Matters here on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor talking to Associate Professor Jess Bersikorski about a new review of the evidence that she and her colleagues have done into whether gluten is actually the culprit when people claim to be gluten sensitive or gluten intolerant, as distinct from celiac disease. Let me be quick to point out. One person says, my husband found out he was intolerant to wheat products. From then, he called others gluten enslaved. Well, Jess, you talked about the restrictive nature of a gluten-free diet before, again, for people who don't have celiac disease, but that there are other options available. Can you just talk about what it means for someone's whole dietary quality if they're taking out a whole group like that, and what the alternatives are that aren't going to trigger these symptoms that people are feeling?
Yeah, so perhaps let's firstly talk a little bit about what it means going gluten-free. When you are following a gluten-free diet, you were possibly purchasing gluten-free alternatives, and we do know from the evidence that has done sort of market research and cost analysis that gluten-free foods are on average 139% more expensive. Those gluten-free foods are often lower in fibre, folate, and key minerals like iron and zinc. So when you are restricting a whole food group of cereals and grains and then choosing gluten-free alternatives, there are nutritional concerns. And then if you switch to something like an alternative and think about ensuring that you are still taking in enough fruits and vegetables, if under the guidance of a dietitian, you can follow a gluten-free or a gluten-restricted diet nutritionally adequately, but it really does require quite careful guidance of a dietitian.
So not just sort of cutting out something and not thinking about what you might be adding back in.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
The other thing you mentioned before when we were talking about potential role, like what's kind of at play when someone's feeling sensitive to gluten, there was the thing that, okay, maybe it's something else that you're sensitive to in the food, that's fine. The other thing you said could be at play was effectively how your brain interprets signals from your gut. I don't think people like being told that maybe a symptom is all in their head, but it is a really important part of what's going on here.
Yeah, and it's quite nuanced. And I think I want to start by saying these are real physiological responses. So the symptoms are not imagined. Rather, what we know is occurring is how the brain and the gut are communicating, or in this instance, miscommunicating. And we know the brain and the gut are closely connected, and that what we expect to happen can strongly shape how we feel. So this means we're believing that a particular food, like gluten, will cause discomfort. This will actually lead to amplifying, and our brain interpreting and amplifying any gut sensations. So the sort of psychology behind those symptoms shows that the expectation has a really powerful effect on how we feel. It doesn't mean that those symptoms are imagined. It just really comes down to this brain-gut communication and how tightly linked that brain and the gut are, and that fear and or anxiety can really amplify any real digestive discomfort and sensations occurring.
So I'm feeling weird when I eat bread. I know that I'm not celiac. What do I do?
And as long as you have indeed ruled out celiac disease, and for anybody who's listening that might feel like gluten or wheat products are an issue for them, strongly encourage, please go see your GP, ensure that you do have adequate celiac disease testing that is only accurate when you still have gluten in your diet. So you cannot go and get an accurate test for celiac disease if you have already started restricting gluten from your diet. Once celiac disease and wheat allergy have been ruled out, we encourage people to focus on overall diet quality. If your gut symptoms are persisting, please seek out a dietitian. They can talk to you about following a structured low FODMAP diet and in a way that will keep those restrictions really targeted and temporary. If there is still a potential role for gluten that needs to be investigated. That dietitian can help guide a really short-term and targeted gluten-free trial and then re-challenge to confirm exactly what the culprit is. And it's really important that those restrictions are short-term to avoid unnecessary long-term food avoidance.
Dietitians are magicians. I've got a couple of questions here on the text line that I might put to you, Jess, about yeast. One person says, I seem to tolerate toasted bread, whereas fresh bread bloats me. I make my own bread with minimal yeast. Another says, I had allergies my whole life and have been tested for celiac. I found I was getting bloating, tiredness, and bad eczema. I eliminated yeast and it helped me immediately. I can still eat wheat, but not yeast. Can yeast be the culprit?
It's interesting because the yeast is getting an increasing attention in these dietary trials. We don't have a lot of these placebo-controlled, double-blind challenge yeast studies to confirm yay or nay if that is a specific effect or not. I also wonder, when you are making your own bread, what other flours are you using? What other processing methods are you using? Are you using something like a sourdough approach? We do know sourdough can reduce the fructan level. So you may actually be choosing a lower FODMAP bread, and therefore it might actually come back to those fermentable carbohydrates as well, playing a role.
Jess, thanks for sharing your knowledge with us again today.
My pleasure. Thanks, Tegan.
Associate Professor Jess Bersikorski is head of the Human Nutrition Group at the University of Melbourne.
Listen to more great stories that take you beyond the headlines. Ask your smart speaker to play ABC RN.